Welcome to the Rising Tide Leadership Podcast, where each week we simplify the complexities of your leadership journey.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Rising Tide Leadership Podcast, where we aim to give you critical and easily applicable leadership concepts to help you along your journey. I'm your co-host, Scott, and I have the privilege of talking about life and leadership with the owner and founder of Rising Tide Leadership, Dr. Michael David Morales, a.k.a. Mo.
Hey, what's up, Scotty? It's good to be here. As always, so let's talk leadership.
Absolutely. So in my professional, maybe personal opinion, Steve Martin will go down as probably one of the greatest actors of all time. Still acting today, in a band today, just amazing man. But one of my favorite films that he stars in is Father of the Bride. In the film, Martin stars as the character George Banks, who is living a phenomenal life. He's got a great house. He's kind of in this seamless groove. Got an amazing wife, a great son, and a great daughter who, at the start of the movie, is about to return from a trip abroad. Well, spoiler alert, not really a spoiler alert, because this movie has been out for quite some time, but his daughter comes home engaged. And this unexpected change just upends the groove that Martin's character was enjoying. And he ultimately ends up spending almost the entirety of the film just trying to manage that change. And you see the just difficulties that he goes through with that. And of course, if you've ever planned a wedding or been part of the planning process, you might know that that can get incredibly complicated and can insinuate more and more change. But once he realizes that he can't cancel this wedding because he valiantly tries to cancel it, the planning process is ultimately what kind of helps him realize and manage that change. And he really has to figure out how to adapt. And so today we're discussing a topic that is essential for anyone navigating the ever-changing workplace in that landscape, including George Banks, and that's dealing with change management. Change is inevitable. One of my all-time favorite quotes is, the only inevitable thing in life is change, but really managing it effectively can make all the difference in how it impacts our teams and our organizations. And so, Mo, why don't you kind of get us started here?
Yeah, dude, I love that movie. In fact, you were talking about how Steve Martin just has like this amazing life. And now that I'm in my 40s, I can really resonate with looking at his house and thinking to myself, what was the mortgage on that thing? So it's kind of funny. Really one of my favorite movies of all time, Steve Martin, Martin Short. They just work so well together. And you're right. He was trying to change everything, and inevitably he couldn't do it. And so I would say, Scott, that when dealing with change management, a lot of us would like to, you know, be more like the wife, but we're probably more like Steve Martin, the husband, in that, which is we don't like change. We're trying to keep things the same. We don't want people to take us too far out of our comfort zones. And that's what we're talking about today is change management. And so, I really want to start out with our first point today, Scott. And this is, we're going to be talking about three things that leaders can do to deal with change management. The first one is this: leaders need to focus on encountering challenges. So whether it's implementing a new process, adapting a new technology, an organizational restructuring, change can disrupt the status quo and it can create resistance among employees. So encountering challenges is something that a leader should do on a regular basis. And so if you're not encountering challenges, then you're not leading. So the best leaders that I know in their industries are looking for the unexpected. They're always looking for scenarios and looking in running situations through their heads about the things that, Scott, really may or may not happen. But the reason they do this, Scott, is they want to get out in front of those challenges and be ready to work them out, take them on, et cetera. And so, we really want to focus on building that resilience. And so the resilience would be, what is going on in your company? How can you work amidst those challenges? How can you build that resilience within your team that is going to be vital for navigating change effectively. And so, Scott, I would say that one of the things that we have to do as leaders, first and foremost, is to be adaptable. You see, the most resilient teams, Scott, are going to adapt quickly to change, and they're going to bounce back from setbacks. So leaders, are you ready to do that? Are you ready to adapt quickly to change? And are you ready to bounce back from the setbacks? Because they're coming. And I hate to be, I don't want to jinx your company right now, but if nothing's going on, then this could be the calm before the storm.
So you've mentioned resilient teams a lot just in this first section. Can you maybe just elaborate a little bit more on what a resilient team looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Scott, are you ready for the first book of the day? Because here it comes. This is a great book. It's called The Leadership Challenge. And in this book, it's really teaching us as leaders to embrace disruptions in your industry. So are you embracing disruptions in your industry? Because when you start to, like I said above, embrace those disruptions and get your team ready to be resilient, they're going to be ready, Scott, for those out-of-the-box solutions that they're going to need to bring. So really the answer to your question is you just got to throw your people into those situations because, as one of my coaches said, the only way you're going to get good is to get good. So leaders out there, if you want to help your people get good, don't baby them. Let them do the things that you know that they're good at. And so what does change look like in your industry? If you're driving or sitting at your desk right now listening to this podcast, what are the things that could possibly cause a need for resiliency in your team? And so, it's important, Scott, if you're a supervisor in any capacity, that you build resiliency in your team. And so I guess I would say this. People can get frustrated really often, and they cannot want to embrace it, right? They are thinking, man, I just don't, there's always another problem. Why do these things always happen to me? Leaders don't think about things that way. Leaders are thinking, man, what's the next thing that could go wrong? Because that challenge is going to be an opportunity. So leaders, you need to stop looking at things as setbacks. When you think of things as opportunities, your people are going to see things the same way. And so how do you do that? Scott, I would say that we need to foster open communication. There's too many leaders out there that are trying to make it look like, man, everything is just fine here. We're okay. Nothing's going wrong. And essentially, what you're telling me is you pretty much are like the duck, right? We've all heard about how ducks look so poised on top of the water, but under the water, man, they are just going and going and going and kicking for all their life. Well, leaders, spoiler alert, as Scott said earlier on about the movie, spoiler alert for you and your leadership, your people know you're not that good. You may think you look good, but you're not that good. So why don't you just let people in on that? Open up that communication. Establish those lines of communication and allow team members both to express within the team to one another their concerns, and also you need to be part of expressing those concerns that you have, because Scott, that's when we start to address challenges, and then we can be collaborative in the way that we tackle those challenges.
Yeah, I feel like if you went back and looked at all of our episodes, the number of times that we've mentioned or talked about how important communication is almost like Absolutely. The secret word is communication. But I love what you said, like amidst those challenges, you're really right. Like it is really important to remember that change also brings opportunities with it. Not just fear, like most people see, but it's really that opportunity to innovate and grow and then really overall improve our ways of working.
Yeah. And remember that by leveraging these opportunities, you know, leaders, you can drive positive change within your organization. And so think of this. I mean, what does it mean for you to recognize opportunities? Because change is going to present opportunities for innovation and for growth. And so that's really important. So don't forget that. You don't want to think of things as obstacles. You want to think of them as opportunities. But How do you recognize those? Sometimes we get so focused on the things that we think are important that we forget to recognize, oh, wow, this is an opportunity for my team. It's an opportunity for me to use as a learning moment or a teaching moment. And then that's gonna foster that innovation and that growth. Scott, our second point, which actually that leads right into our second point today, which is we really want to, if you're a leader, focus on engaging employees. That's the second point. Involving employees in the change process, Scott, is going to foster what we like to call the buy-in, right? In John Maxwell's 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, he says that if you want to be an effective leader, you need to create a buy-in of ownership for your people. So how do you do that? Well, I guess within that, Scott, the first thing would be, you know, to empower those team members, right? We talked about communication, but after you communicate, you have to empower your employees to contribute ideas and, you know, give those solutions. Because, Scott, your people have solutions. They have ideas, they have solutions. And so many times I bet leaders that you're sitting around the table and you're pontificating and telling everybody about your great sage wisdom. And there's probably somebody sitting around the table thinking, I can fix this problem right now if my boss, if my supervisor would just shut up. So leaders, let me be the one to tell you what your people are thinking right now when they're sitting with you at the table. They're thinking, boss, you just need to let me contribute my ideas because I've got solutions. And guess what that's going to do, leaders? It's going to foster a sense of ownership. And even more so, Scott, what it's going to do is going to create a commitment for the team.
So, Mo, with that idea being that we want to engage all of our employees, I know there are just companies that are tiny out there. There are companies that are incredibly large. But, you know, say you're a leader in a company and you oversee kind of around and or lead, I should say, maybe around like 500 employees. So how would you recommend that we engage a number that size? And really, like, how do you know if you've engaged them enough?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, the bigger that your team gets, the tougher it's going to be. And I remember Dale Carnegie said that, you know, the best leaders are going to deal with their people on a basis of really just individualization. They're going to help their people understand that even though, I mean, Scott, if you've got 500 people in your organization, you're doing something right. But think about Sam Walton, right? He's got a book called Made in America. And Scott, I know you've read Made in America, right?
I have.
Great book, right? And so Sam Walton, to the day he died, literally, he treated his people as individuals. I mean, he learned how to fly these little like Cessna planes, so he would actually fly to the Walmarts that he created that were close enough to him to get to. By the time he passed away, I mean, he had them all over the country, but when he first started, Scott, and he had a ton of, every time he had a new store, he would go into that store. And Scott, he was actually looking at like prices of bubble gum, prices of toothbrushes. And he was just fanatical about these things. But then he was also fanatical about the people. And he would recognize clean stores, for instance. He would go in and he'd say, man, this store looks great. At the same time, he'd look at somebody and say, why is this on the shelf over there? Our competitor across the street knows that these are selling. We need to move this entire display up. And people would do that. But he would recognize, Scott, and reward the innovative ideas. And sometimes he would go into a store and he would see something. They'd say, well, who put this display like this? And they'd say, oh, so-and-so. He's the manager or even maybe just one of the boxing kids in the shelvers. And they had an idea. And Sam Walton, he encouraged that. And so people kind of just did what they thought was best. That's how Walmart got good. The only way to get good, right, is to get good. He rewarded those innovative ideas. Walmart famously, and I think they still do it if I'm not mistaken, they have this this convention that they do once a year where they bring all of their management people together. And Scott, it's like a party, man. It is raucous. And so I've never been to one. But I know people who said that they witnessed them, and that they're just a lot of fun, and it's about recognizing people and wanting to hear better ideas and continuously improve.
Man, we should try to sneak into one. That would be we'll call it a learning
crash the party.
A leadership case study. So
love it, man. Let's do it.
No, I do love that book, and the way that he, I mean, just with everything we've talked about so far today with communication and empowering employees, like he not only cared, like you said, about pricing, but the way that he provided and empowered his employees is just phenomenal. I mean, I read that book and I was like, man, maybe I should be working for Walmart.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. I mean, if you want to see how the sausage is made, man, they do a great, they've done great, and I think they still do that stuff.
Yeah, 100%. So Mo, then how can our leaders leverage kind of the opportunities that we've been talking about to just foster a positive change within their own organizations?
Yeah, Scott, that actually leads me into our last point, yes. Which is this. You know, leaders, if you want to start with an understanding of change and in evaluating the process, what you want to do is this. You want to encourage proactiveness in your people, just like that kid or manager who was in the box store for Sam Walton was able to do those kind of proactive things. Your people are only going to be proactive if you allow them to be proactive. Some leaders out there say that they want their people to do stuff. They're like, oh man, I just want my people to think outside of the box and be proactive. But you don't want to be proactive. You want to be proactive the way that you would be proactive. And that's not helpful. You need to, Scott, take a proactive approach to change management that allows leaders to anticipate challenges and mitigate those risks. So, I mean, leaders, are you doing that? Because it's about continuous evaluation. Because continuous evaluation and refinement of our approach to change is going to ensure ongoing success. In fact, one of my favorite authors, a guy named Andy Stanley, he's both a church pastor and he's really just a business guru. He says this to his staff. He says, we meet every week. I think they still meet on Mondays because they're a church and so they do stuff on Sunday. And he says, we are a program-driven business, meaning every Sunday at the very minimum, and his churches are huge. So, I mean, they've got programs every day of the week. But because they are focused on program, they're going to meet on Monday to go over the successes and the failures and everything in between. So leaders, think about your industry right now. What are the things that are worth evaluating in your business? Because again, like Andy Stanley says, anything worth doing is worth evaluating. And so if you're not evaluating what's going on, you're going to start believing your own press, right? The good and the bad are just going to kind of go by the wayside. And Scott, one of the ways that we can do this, if we really want to encourage proactiveness, here's one for you leaders. What are your feedback mechanisms? You see, if you don't have any feedback mechanisms, you need to establish those because it's going to allow you to gather insight and it's going to help you make better informed decisions because your people, again, they've got ideas, they've got thoughts. Every time something happens, Scott, in a business, every time a decision is made, every time something new comes about, you better believe that the people all have thoughts on it. And we always hear we always hear people talk about water cooler talk, right? And for those who don't know what water cooler talk is, I think it was that term was kind of a big, like even like back in the day in the 60s and 70s, it would be, what do people talk about around the water cooler, around the coffee machine? When they come in and they're taking a break and they're again, you know, having a smoke break or whatever it is, what are they talking about? Because they've got, those are feedback mechanisms right there, Scott. So as leaders, we don't need to control that. But what we need to do is we need to be a part of that process. And so leaders, are you giving your people a way to tell you the things that are going good and bad? Are you actually asking them the question, What would you do in this situation? And of all the businesses that I've worked for over the years, all the churches, all these things that I've done, the question that I get the least is, well, Mo, what do you think about this? And Scott, you know, because we've got a million podcasts and all the other stuff that we do, I've got thoughts. I've got ideas.
Yep.
I've got feedback. And you know what, Scott? All of our people out there have feedback. So leaders, what are your mechanisms? And so, well, Mo, what do you mean mechanisms? Do you have an open door policy? Do you have an actual meeting like Andy Stanley does on Mondays where people are told, hey, speak now and not forever hold your peace because I want you to speak now. You'd be like, hey, things went wrong. What was going on? The lighting was messed up or the sound was off or so-and-so didn't come on stage when they were supposed to. Like, what's going on here? That's a feedback mechanism in that meeting for them. Leaders, what are your feedback mechanisms? Because your people deserve those feedback mechanisms because you need to ask them for their feedback. Don't be that leader that says, well, you know, people know that in the way that I work that I've got an open door policy and that's all that needs to be said because people should be able to. No, people shouldn't just be able to come. You should invite them in. You have to invite them into those feedback mechanisms, and then your people are going to maybe start thinking, maybe Scott really does want to know what I'm thinking. And then as you push and push and push in a good way, people are going to start telling you what they really think about you.
That's so true. I feel like one of the things that I hear the most often in the workplace, and it's sometimes very frustrating, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I feel like it's such a common saying that we throw around so much. And
absolutely.
We hear all the time. And I feel like we automatically align ourselves with that thought process. Oh, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Oh, if things are going super well, or, you know, we're turning a profit or, you know, everybody's here and we're not having high turnover, why would we change anything? And I feel like that saying doesn't exactly align with kind of establishing that feedback mechanism. So what would you say kind of to our listeners that are constantly hearing that in the workplace?
Scott, one of the things that I dislike the most is that saying, if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. This is why I love my engineer friends. You know what they say? They take that saying, Scott, and they say this. If it ain't broke, break it and fix it to make it better. And that, leaders, is what we are doing. We are constantly looking at things and wanting to make them better. The question you should ask yourself every day, again, this is an Andy Stanley thing, so I don't want to take his, steal his thunder, but he always says, we want to make it better. Leaders, are you making it better in your workplace? Are you getting in front of things? Are you giving people the chance to get better? Because as leaders, good enough isn't, right? As we've heard before, we want, and I think that's Hertz Rent-A-Car, right? We're good enough isn't or whatever, but really leaders, that's what we're living in. And like I said, if you're living in the calm before the storm right now, my hope is that you are getting ready to, you know, break something because you need to make things better for your people. And so what you don't want to do, Scott, is just get in that monotonous feel of, well, it's just another day at the office. Well, one of the things that I've supervised people over the years, and they always would come back with the same thing to me. And they say, Mo, you're always like, things were going fine. And then you just messed it all up. But yes, I want my people to get better. So I'll always say, well, why don't we do things this way or change this way? And people get so frustrated when I say, you know, our job is to make things better. You know, just because something works, and you know, when things do work, Scott, I'm not just going to mess things up to mess things up. But if I am thinking, well, I think if we change this a little bit here or move these time frames or move the way that these processes go, it's going to be a little bit difficult on the front end. But I think on the back end, in the long haul, it's going to be better. So leaders, get out of that mentality of if it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. And start thinking like an engineer, which is if it ain't broke, let's break it and make it better.
Yeah, everybody likes breaking things, so it should just come hand in hand.
We've been doing it since we were kids, Scott.
Exactly. Although as kids, I don't know if we necessarily put it back together and made it better per se. There are a number of G.I. Joes, I feel like, growing up that are still broken to this day.
Yes.
So, R.I.P. Yes. But Mo, before we head out, do you have any final thoughts for us today?
Yeah, I do. Leaders, I would say this. You need to be the most open person in the room when it comes to change management. It is so easy for us as leaders to tell other people that they need to be open to change, when in reality, leaders, it's really us that's not open to change. I want my people to feel like they can do things, and I'm not going to get upset. In fact, you're going to find this, leaders, when you actually start giving people the opportunity to make changes, things are going to start getting messed up, and you're probably going to get frustrated and say, why did that person do that? But you need to get away from that thought process and think to myself, man, I'm just glad that they want to change things, that they want to make things better. And they might totally, your people might totally screw something up, but you know what? If they do it in a way where they're trying to make something better, well, then don't get upset with them. Help them and redirect them to where they're supposed to be. Because, you know, leaders, change is what you need to be about. Leaders are all about change. So again, as we talked about encountering challenges, engaging employees, encouraging proactiveness, you know who's in charge of all that? You are in charge of that. As the leader, you're the person who is responsible both for the productivity of your company or whatever your sector, your little corner of your company or industry is, and also specifically for your team. So leaders, remember, it's about embracing opportunity, because again, that's going to bring you to growth and innovation, and your people are going to jump onto that process. And when it comes to leadership, you are the one that drives those processes. So give your people the best opportunity to succeed. And the way you do that, Scott, is to get in front and be ready to deal with that change management. Mm.
Default aggressive, as Jocko would say.
I love it.
Well, everybody, thanks for tuning into the Rising Tide Leadership Podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, and join us next time for more insights on becoming a leader who makes a difference. Until then, keep leading with purpose and passion. We'll see you guys all next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rising Tide Leadership Podcast. Highlights and resource links are available for you in the show notes. We hope that you will join us next time as we continue on the leadership journey. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss out, and share with others so they don't miss out. See you next time.